Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hey, it's the Tom Hartmann Podcast, brought to you by Cameron Hughes Wine. There's a little secret that most people don't know about the highest quality wineries in the United States and how they work. They'll say, you know, as they start their year, okay, we're going to bottle, say, 5,000 bottles of wine this year. And so they overproduce for that, produce enough for maybe 6,000 bottles of wine. But, you know, they've sold 5,000, they're ready to get 5,000 out. And so that's basically all they do under their own label. And then when they're done, they've got casks of wine left over that haven't been bottled. Cameron Hughes contracts with some of the very best vineyards in America to take that essentially surplus wine. I mean, you know, it's the exact same wine you would buy in a bottle for 50, 60, 100. One of the Cameron Hughes wines I had last week, the retail price, if you knew who the brand was over $150 a bottle. Cameron Hughes buys that in bulk, bottles it, puts just a simple number. Here it is, lot 506 or lot 622. Simple number on it, and you get some of the most spectacular wines at huge discounts off what you would normally pay. Cameron Hughes has been doing this since 2001, seeking out high-end wine from around the world and selling it online direct to his customers. This is not just American wines, earning Cameron Hughes Wine the number one wine brand online. It's just extraordinary stuff. I recently sampled Lot 609. This is a Cabernet Sauvignon. It was insane. It was so good. It was bold. It was rich. It had the black fruit and red licorice and crushed red rock, all these extraordinary tastes, juicy and ripe on the palate. You got to check this out. Go to chwine.com/Tom, T-H-O-M. C-H as in Cameron Hughes, that's his name, the guy who started the company and runs it. I've talked with him. He's a great guy, and he's doing amazing stuff. chwine.com/T-H-O-M. Or text the word wine, W-I-N-E, text the word wine to 511-511, and you'll get free shipping with your minimum three-bottle order. So text wine to 511-511. Cameron Hughes Wine. Exceptional value. Extraordinary wine. Now enjoy the podcast.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. It's Tom Hartmann here on this beautiful Monday here in live from Portland, Oregon. By the way, just a heads up, I think I've mentioned this in the past, but next week, it's the week after next. Yeah, the week after next, Louise and I are going to Orlando for a week-long neurolinguistic programming, NLP training session with Richard Bandler, the guy who invented NLP back in the 60s and 70s. And you know, it's going to be fascinating. We're going to be taking some equipment with us so we can broadcast live from the conference. We're going to be talking about NLP on the air. And this is not an advertiser or anything like that. This is just something that I've found very, very cool information in my life, useful information. I wrote two books about NLP, one about NLP and ADHD. It's called Healing ADD. And one about NLP and politics. It's titled Cracking the Code. So anyhow, if you're interested in that and, learning more about that, purenlp.com, purenlp.com is the website, just FYI. Sarah Huckabee Sanders was kicked out of a restaurant because of Donald Trump. This is the top news of the day, it seems. Trump tweeting about this, the Red Hen restaurant in Lexington, Virginia. The owner is a woman named Stephanie Wilkinson, and she was home, and she got a call from one of her chefs who said that Sarah Huckabee Sanders and her family, a bunch of people with her, had come into the, had made a reservation under her husband's name and had come, and showed up in the restaurant. And they have several gay members of the staff who were just very, very uncomfortable with serving her, with providing food to her, with facilitating it. And they took a vote among the restaurant's employees and decided to ask her to leave. And so they called the owner and said, you know, will you go along with what we just voted? And Stephanie Wilkinson said, sure. And she came down to the restaurant and, in a very calm and polite fashion, asked Sarah to step outside so they could talk privately, told her what was going on, asked her if she would leave, please. And Sarah did. Sarah then tweeted on her government account about this experience, about being bounced out, and then which is a Walter Schaub tweeted about this, that this is a clear violation of the here it is. Walter Schaub is the former director of it's either the congressional or the White House. I don't recall if it's, you know, first branch or second branch, but he was the head ethics guy. And he tweets, one fine morning, the president of a 330, now see, this is in response to Trump, actually. Donald Trump tweeted, the redhead should, a restaurant should focus more on cleaning its filthy canopies, doors, and windows, badly needs a paint job, rather than refusing to serve a fine person like Sarah Huckabee Sanders. I always had a rule, if a restaurant's dirty on the outside, it's dirty on the inside. So, Walter Schaub tweets, one fine morning, the president of a 330-million-person country with the world's largest nuclear arsenal decided the matter that needed his attention was the vengeful destruction of a rural eatery. Stealing babies and children made him hurt less, but the little things helped, too. P.S. Trump's Red Hen rant would also violate the misuse of position regulation if he followed the tradition of trying to act as though it applied. But this walking conflict of interest has chosen to hold himself to a lower standard than the federal workforce he supervises. Meanwhile, while Trump is calling the restaurant filthy, the Trump restaurants themselves, this is a somewhat older story. It's from Huffington Post, and I'm sorry I don't have the date on it. I don't believe, but this was back when Shinzo Abe was coming to. This was in January, February when Shinzo Abe was coming to eat at Mar-a-Lago. And this is from the news reports. Records from a routine inspection January 26th. Noted 13 violations at Mar-a-Lago's dining establishments, including three deemed high priority, the most severe category. In coolers, foods like shrimp and burgers were found at temperatures up to 50 degrees Fahrenheit, much warmer than the required 41 degrees. A ham was stored at 57 degrees, and fish that was intended to be served raw had not undergone proper parasite destruction and needed to be cooked or thrown away immediately, according to the inspectors. So Trump seems to have some problems down at Mar-a-Lago. But there's a larger issue here. Maxine Waters came out and spoke to this issue of Kristen Nielsen being heckled basically out of MXDC, the Mexican restaurant on 14th Street in Washington, D.C. last week. Sarah Huckabee Sanders now being asked to leave a restaurant. Apparently somebody was booed in a theater. I don't have that story in front of me, but you know, this kind of stuff. Here's what Maxine Waters had to say.
The people are going to turn on them. They're going to protest. They're going to absolutely harass them until they decide that they're going to tell the president, no, I can't hang with you. This is wrong. This is unconscionable. We can't keep doing this to children.
And that was on MSNBC, by the way. And so now you've got Maxine Waters speaking out and, you know, essentially endorsing this. So an open split has appeared among Democrats and progressives, some like Maxine Waters saying, hey, you know, this is what happens when you behave the way that you're behaving. You shouldn't be surprised, which essentially is an endorsement of it. And then you've got others saying, hey, wait a minute. Michelle Obama told us when they go low, we go high. And, you know, wasn't that a great time during the Obama administration? Stephanie Wilkinson, the owner of the Red Hen restaurant, said, we just felt there are moments in time when people need to live their convictions, and this appeared to be one. By the way, Chuck Schumer just tweeted out a picture of himself, and I'm not sure who's with him. I don't know his family, but might be his daughter, might be his wife, I just don't know. Anyhow, he says, family in front of an Italian restaurant, and it says, family dinner tonight at Ellen B. Spumoni Gardens in the heart of Italian Brooklyn, like eating in Sicily. And I don't know if that's a violation of the rules, but, you know, it's basically what he's saying is, I don't get harassed when I go out. So over at the website, you know, well, actually, let me just share with you this. Louis C., over at Democratic Underground posted this. He said, I've been told by Trump supporter family members, what if it was you and you were asked to leave because of your politics? And he basically says, you know, I would leave. Are you kidding? Please, he says, every business who supports Trump, let me know so that, you know, basically so I can avoid you. He says, as I have done, Louise and I have walked out of establishments that have Fox News on the TV. He said, I won't eat in a restaurant that has Fox News on the TV. He tells a story about his dentist who had Fox News on. He complained about it. The receptionist said, no, I like Fox News. He complained to the dentist. The dentist fired the receptionist. He talks about a drain pipe cleaning guy who shows up with a Trump Pence sticker, bumper sticker on his truck. And he says, no, I don't, you know, find somebody, you know, find another customer. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to hire you. You're not going to work on my house. He said, asked to leave a restaurant. My answer would be, thanks for letting me know you're a Trump supporter. If I knew that in the first place, I never would have come in here. And then he said, I think this is the point of this post by Louis C. over on Democratic Underground. And it's brilliant. He said, let's get something straight. This is not political. It's moral. I've done business with people who supported McCain, Bush, and Romney. I disagreed with all three's politics, but I never found them to be immoral. I love Michelle Obama. But her position, which I always held until now, when they go low, we go high, didn't work out so well. We lost the presidency, we lost the Senate, we lost the House, and we lost the Supreme Court in 2016. And it may take an effing generation to win back what we lost in 2016. And then Boomin Tribune.com, which is a blog, a guy's personal blog, he calls himself Boomin. I don't know what his real name is. He says, he starts out asking the question, what if the good citizens of Washington, D.C. surrounded the White House and refused to leave? How much violence would the Trump administration be willing to use to move them? And what would that provoke? And he said, this is, which is an interesting question. I'm not advocating this be done and neither is he, but he says, this is what happens when our system of checks and balances breaks down. The less faith people have in the courts and in Congress to sustain bare minimum standards of human decency, the more they're willing to take matters into their own hands. Chasing administration officials and their close allies out of restaurants and movie theaters is still a fairly mild version, he writes, of what may come. And then he warns, if these elections coming up in November of this year do not translate into actual political power for the left, that's when we should anticipate a breakdown in law and order. That's when you might see the White House surrounded. And again, the White House has been surrounded in the past. It happened in 1931. Maybe it was 1930. He had Herbert Hoover in the White House. He had the Great Depression. The soldiers from World War I had been promised a $100 bonus for their service in World War I. And because of the Depression, they desperately needed that money. They started camping out on the White House lawn and camped all the way down to the Potomac River, which is quite a ways. It's about a 12-block stretch there from the White House down to the Potomac. And it was filled with what they referred to with tents, and they called this the Bonus Army. These are the guys who wanted their bonuses. And what did Herbert Hoover do? He ordered a guy who went on to become a great general in World War II, two of them. Eisenhower was one, and the other guy was the fellow who managed, and I'm brain farting his name right now, but the guy who managed the operations in the Pacific, and Douglas MacArthur, that he later fired. And he ordered MacArthur to go through there, you know, and drive them out. They burned them out. I don't recall if any died, but they, you know, certainly people were injured and their stuff was torn up. And that was kind of the beginning of protests at the White House. And, you know, and a fine thing it was. But this, you know, this has happened before. Americans have risen up before. Now, the last time it was out of desperation, protesting, you know, 12 years of Republican politics, or I guess it was 8 years from 1920. When, you know, with Harding and his tax, he cut taxes down to 25%, which is exactly what Trump did, or more or less. And then Hoover.
This This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Coolidge, of course, was in between, but all three of these right-wing Republican presidents in the 20s brought about the Great Crash. People were protesting it. Now they're protesting this. And welcome back. Let's see what we have on the phone lines here. Tripper in Decatur, Georgia. Hey, Tripper, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good.
I sent you a link on Twitter yesterday with an old interview about Nicaragua and during the Contras.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a side note, but it was really
I didn't catch that, Tripper. I'm sorry. My Comcast service kept going up and down all day, and there were a few hours there where I just said screw it, and I wasn't on the computer. So what? Tell me about the story.
Well, that was a side note. It was real quick. It was an old C-SPAN from 1986. And the guy, the host, was Carl Ruttage or something like that. Mm-hmm. It really reminded me of your show because it was a call-in show. It was a C-SPAN call-in show, and they had somebody that came back. Anyway, if you get a chance, check it out. But what I wanted to call about was the divide you're talking about between the Democratic Party, where some people are like, you know, we should go high when they go low type of thing. And I just feel like, you know, you can't dine or cater to fascists. You know, and I don't think the answer is to just go along. We're edging ever closer and closer to you know, more fascist, you know, direction. And I saw a report today. It was an ex-National Guardsman or a National Guardsman or something that had said something about, he had wrote a comment on, I think it was a site raising money for these immigrants. And it was, he said, oh, they're lucky we're not executing them, is what he said. And they said that he's probably going to face some, you know, reprimand for writing that. But, I mean, you have to wonder how many ICE agents share that sentiment, wish they could be more brutal in their dealings. And it's just a really scary time, I feel. You know, it's just every day I look at the news and it's just edging closer and closer to you know, I don't even want to say what's starting to look like because I don't want to, you know, fulfill Godwin's lawyer. But, you know, it's getting scary, you know.
Yeah. I don't think we're heading in a Nazi Germany direction. I think we're heading more in a Erdogan's Turkey direction or Orban's Hungary or Duterte's Philippines or, if you want a 1930s analogy, Mussolini's Italy. It seems to me that that's the direction we're going.
Yeah. And you made a comment earlier about, you know, when the rule of law starts breaking down, you know, I wanted to compare that to, you know, the you know, again, the people that are coming seeking asylum, they're running from countries where, you know, the law is not protecting people. They haven't investigated a female murder if a female's murdered in one of these countries, it never gets solved, basically. The chances of getting solved are like nil. And so it's like people are taking the law into their own hands because there is no law to protect people. And, you know, I can see that happening here. You know, if you know, things keep on breaking down, people are going to, you know, you can't tell people not to stand up to these people is basically my point. You know, if you're in a restaurant and, you know, you got Sarah Huckabee Sanders there and you got a gay staff and they all feel uncomfortable, well, you know what? It's time to stand up. It's time to say, you know what? We're not going to put up with this. And I don't think going along with it is the right way to go. And that's really all I have to say.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for that call. That's fascinating. I need to check Twitter here. I just heard that maybe people can't hear our callers when they're listening to our nonprofit stations. And if that's the case, somebody tweet me and let me know. Okay. Anyhow, we'll be back with more of the program right after this. It's 22 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. What is the best way to respond to all this? Bill in Sebastian, Florida. Bill, your thoughts?
Yeah, good morning, Tom. I had a similar experience. They had Fox News on at the Dunkin' Donuts down here in Sebastian, and this was back in 2003, I believe. And I stood up, gave a brief speech, and walked out.
Mm-hmm.
I also did the same in front of Walmart. I took a sign and said a decent wage should be made available for these people. And I was given a warrant not to, you know, take it off the property for a year.
Wow.
And just an aside would be, I called Sessions' office before he was has the position he has now. And I was put on hold by the staffer. And believe it or not, he played When Johnny's Marching Home Again.
The so, rebel song, yeah.
Yeah. So
the Confederate song.
it makes me, it's terribly disheartening. But we all have to, you know, hang in there and spread the word.
Amen.
And what happened in Guantanamo Bay is not too far-fetched from what's going to happen here in America and what is happening here in America. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Bill. Yeah, this family separation, I'm going to get into that a little later on in the program. And, you know, the role of race and all this stuff, too. That's for our next hour. Yesterday, Louise and I, you know, a week or so ago, I told you we had binge-watched Taken, the TV series. And somebody called in and said, oh, if you like Taken, you've got to watch Person of Interest. And so, big mistake. I went home and said, okay, let's check out Person of Interest. And now we're addicted. We're up to the third year, I think. It's like six or seven seasons. And I'm pretty sure we're in season three, like episode six or eight, something like that. And there was a quote from that last night. In fact, it was from the bad guy, Elias. But, you know, he was speaking. He's in the process of becoming the good guy, I think. But anyhow, what he said was, and this is from Person of Interest TV show, he said, civilization rests upon the principle that we treat our criminals better than they treated their victims, that we not stoop to their level. Now, you know, you could take that a whole bunch of different ways, I guess, in this context. But I just, you know, that's our quote for the day. Cleve in Clayton, Georgia. Cleve, your thoughts.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Good.
I don't agree with taking the children away from the parents. But presidents throughout history have done things that broke the law because they thought it was in the best interest of America. For example, FDR took tens of thousands of Japanese Americans, their children, German Americans, in German camps.
But Cleve, we look back on that with great shame. Why would we want to repeat that?
It was right. I'm just saying they did it. But what I'm saying is by setting a precedent where people go out and attack people in public, verbally or physically, because of their opinions. I mean,
nobody's been attacked physically by protesters.
I didn't say verbally or physically. But what's going to happen is you got wackos on the other side. They're going to come out and start attacking people for being.
They have been doing that for some time, Cleve. They have been doing that for quite some time. I mean,
stop it. But by promoting it, you're not helping. Anyway, you ask what happens when tens of thousands of people get in front of the government.
So you think, I'm just trying to understand your logic here, Cleve. You're saying that people should not protest the presence of Trump administration officials in restaurants or other public places because that will cause hardcore right-wingers to start behaving more and more like brown shirts, that they're going to start, you know, harassing progressives. I mean, Chuck Schumer had dinner in a restaurant last night, and nobody said a word.
I'm not saying that they did. You just asked what happens when tens of thousands of
people. I can hardly hear you, Cleve. I'm sorry.
I said, you asked what happens when tens of thousands of people get in front of the White House. In 1935, they sent the Armed National Guard in there in like seven different cities, and they opened fire on the union people that were trying to form a union.
Yeah.
And this happened throughout history.
Yep.
I can't say. I mean.
Yeah, so you're concerned about the backlash is the bottom line. I got it. Okay, Cleve, thank you. Your vote is registered, essentially. Marty in Kansas City, Kansas. Hey, Marty, what's on your mind? Marty? Listen on Sirius XM? Apparently not. Brad in Elk Grove Village, Illinois. Hey, Brad, what's up?
Yes, you mentioned General Dwight D. Eisenhower. When he entered the Ohrdruf concentration camp in 1945, he said the American soldier does not know what he is fighting for, but now he knows what he is fighting against. I liken that to what we're seeing out of the Trump administration and the backlash by saying the American voter of good conscience may not know what he is voting for, but now he knows what he is voting against. And one additional point I think is very important here. The Trump administration, Donald Trump, his posse, and all of his supporters, most of them, I won't say all of them, they see people of color not as second-class people or citizens, but as second-class human beings,
right.
not worthy of protection, human rights protections. And the vermin or the infestation comment very much echoes Joseph Goebbels' films, Jud Sus and the Rothschilds of World War II, that painted the Jews as rats and vermin to be exterminated.
Yeah, I don't know about the Rothschilds, but that was certainly Goebbels' thing, yeah. Brad, thanks for the call. Richard in Chicago. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Hi, I'm trying to get this concise. You know, it's the law now that, it has to do with Sarah Sanders, and I was upset when they didn't allow, didn't force the cake maker, you know, to make a wedding cake, right? And the court ruled. So this happened, and I'm kind of like positive about Sarah being kicked up. I started thinking about, well, what's up with me, you know, on this thing.
Well, hang on just a second, Brad. Richard, there's the cake maker claimed religion, and you're protected from government interference, which would include forcing you to do something. You're protected from government interference based on your religion. But you're not protected from government interference based on your politics. And to the best of my knowledge, the woman who owns the Red Hen restaurant has not asserted that her religious beliefs require her to push back against Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Frankly, I think she should, claim any religion, but she hasn't.
Well, yeah, but the thing is that it sort of diluted the whole. I mean, they didn't say what part of religion. I mean, you could be the religion of a rock and say that the rock is telling me now not to do this. I mean,
that's
there
right.
was no basis.
So that's the danger of the cake decision by the Supreme Court. But back to you, Richard.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, sort of, I've been sort of teasing this thing around, you know, and I'm thinking, well, you also, you know, when somebody, this is now, they've lowered the law and the requirements of people, what people have to do to serve people. So I think this woman could claim anything she wanted, and that's fine. And that's the law, and that's the law they wanted. And that's the only way to stand up to bullies like these people, the Republicans, is to give it to them in their face, because being nice and going high when they go low isn't working. And, you know, people have to say, well, the court says you don't have to serve people anymore. You know, you don't have to give a woman who's got a dead child in her body a pharmacy prescription, for God's sakes, you know?
Yes.
So,
this was another story, you know, by the way, Richard, for people who don't know what you're talking about. Over the weekend, this broke, that a young woman who was pregnant wanted to have a baby. The baby died in her womb, right, in her uterus. And she went to her doctor and said, there's something wrong. He said, there's no heartbeat anymore. This baby is dead. Having a dead baby inside your uterus can kill you, right? It's a piece of tissue that's going to start to putrefy, and because there's no more blood circulating through it. And so he wrote her a prescription for an abortifacient, for a drug that would cause her to basically miscarry this fetus. In fact, it wasn't to the point of being a fetus yet. It was whatever it was. And she went to the pharmacy, and the pharmacist said, no, I can't give you this because of my religion. And she's
it's
like,
Walgreens.
You know, I can't save your life because of my religion, which is disgusting. I agree with you.
Yeah.
But back to what year?
Well, so the thing is that, you know, the Democrats, we seem to get into all these nuances, right? And the Republicans don't. So it's time to stop being so nuanced about it. It's okay for you people to do whatever they want to do. All they got to go is abracadabra. I was told by God not to do this. And there's no basis any longer, and there's no point in debating it. The only thing is to give it back to them, and maybe eventually they'll figure it out. No one's
well, these are the same people. These are the same people who have argued for decades, you know, I was going to say centuries, but really, you know, it was institutionalized as law until 1954 and until the 1960s, have argued for decades that individual businesses should be free to discriminate because of states' rights and all that kind of stuff. Right.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So, and it's, you know, it's horrible. And, you know, but you know, if that's what they want, the Republicans, time for them to get it in their face. And
you know, I got
maybe
it.
Then a few of these bastards will, you know, which I think I can say, will, you know, become reasonable people.
Yeah, you can. You can say it, although it's, you know, there are some people who are parentless who may be hurt by that word, which is why I don't use it. But I understand what you're saying. I think we need to come up with a new set of swear words here. Richard, thank you for the call. Rich in Greenwood, Indiana. Hey, Rich, a quick one. I got to hit a break here.
Right on. Walter Schaub, who resigned, did so by describing that this president has departed from ethical norms.
Right.
He was senior director of ethics. Also, remember from
was that in the White House or was that in
the White House?
It was in the White House.
Was surrounded by anti-war protesters, and they had to use buses to be a wall, if you will. And Nixon is known to have said, Henry, they're going to break in and get us. So,
well, and Henry Kissinger told this story later that the day before the White House, there were over 1 million people on the lawn of the White House and around it protesting the Vietnam War. It was a massive demonstration. And the day before that, or a very short period of time before that, Richard Nixon had ordered the Pentagon to provide him with a scenario for using low-yield nuclear weapons on Hanoi, on North Vietnam. He wanted to drop nukes on Vietnam, which could have started a nuclear war with the Soviet Union. And Kissinger had been trying to talk him out of it, but Nixon was going to do this. And then the protests happened, a million kids outside the White House, and Nixon looked out at that and said, Henry, I don't think we should drop the bomb, or words to that effect. I mean, that was the thing, according to Kissinger, that changed Nixon's mind. That's pretty incredible.
I knew you'd know. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call, Rich. I appreciate it. And yeah, this is these are those kind of, you know, crisis times, and we need to, you know, we need to figure out what we're going to do. How do we go forward with this? But the, you know, the question, when they go low, should we keep going high? And or for that matter, is asking Sarah Huckabee Sanders to leave a restaurant, is that even going low? Is that a high moral statement?
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
In fact, it might be that saying to Christian Nelson, you know, no peace, no meal, basically, is going high. Hey, do you brush with an electric toothbrush, or have you wanted to? If you're using one of the older, bigger, bulkier, you know, and some of them, you know, are so aggressive they can even damage your mouth, electric toothbrushes, or if you've never used an electric toothbrush, I want you to pay attention. There's a new electric toothbrush. Time magazine called it the invention of the year, right? It's called Quip, Q-U-I-P. It's slim, it's lightweight, it's about the size of a regular toothbrush. It's got a, you know, a little AAA battery inside that powers it and powers it for months at a time between changes. And it does a really great job. It aggressively cleans your teeth, but it does so in a way that's good for your gums and good for your teeth. It's the perfect two-minute clean. So check this thing out. And it's great for traveling. It comes with a little tube that you can drop it into travel because, like I said, it's about the size of a regular toothbrush, much, much smaller than your big electric toothbrushes. And you can find out all about it at getquip.com/Tom. That's G-E-T, getquip, Q-U-I-P, .com/THOM. Getquip.com/Tom for more information. It's only $25, and they send you the refills, the brush heads that you're supposed to replace every 3 months. Every 3 months, they'll send those to you for only $5 free shipping. It's an amazing deal. Getquip.com/Tom. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. There's, you know, Marianne just called and raised this really interesting question. I raised it in the context where she was talking about having escorted a friend into an abortion clinic. And as they walked down the gauntlet, they were spit upon. They were yelled at, you know, all these pictures of dead fetuses and everything else. And that caused her to think that shouting at Kirstjen Nielsen in a restaurant or going to her house with a bullhorn and playing the sounds of children crying at night, was not appropriate. I would point out that what the abortion clinic protesters are doing is very carefully calibrated to be legal. They have walked right up to the edge of what is legal, and the Supreme Court has ruled that what they're doing is legal. As long as they stay on public streets or on public property, they can shout all they want. And so, you know, walking into a restaurant that doesn't want you in there and harassing a patron is breaking the law. That's trespass. And protesting outside someone's home as opposed to their place of business may or may not be legal. And I frankly don't know the law on that. But it seems to me that it would be considered, you know, a public disturbance, creating a public disturbance. And so, you know, it's like, where should we draw the line if we should? I think obviously we had to draw a line someplace. Where do we draw that line? Anyhow, back to our conversation here. Paul in Benton, Pennsylvania. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Yeah, Tom. You know, in response to the thing with Michelle Obama, they had no other choice but to go high, because otherwise the right would have been screaming angry black people.
Yeah.
Second thing is, as far as, you know, counter-protesting, just take a page out of what the anti-abortion activists do. If they could find out what's legal and what's not legal, certainly our side should be able to find out what is legal.
Well, I think in the case of Kristen Nielsen, if they had stood outside on 14th Street on the public sidewalk outside MXDC, the restaurant that Nielsen was in, with signs and whatnot, and protested protested her as she came out, I think that would have been entirely legal. That would have fallen into that category. But on the other hand, sometimes breaking the law is an important part of nonviolent, direct action, civil disobedience. Yeah, it's literally civil disobedience, meaning you're disobeying the law, right? So,
right.
So there is a long history of that. I mean, it goes all the way back to Luba Katie Stanton and her friend getting arrested for voting in November of 1872. So, and Susan B. Anthony. So there you go. Anyhow, Paul, thank you for the call. Therese. Teresa in Walder, Texas? Hey,
yes.
Hello? You're on the air.
Hello?
Yeah, you're on. Is it Terrace?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm on the air. I just had a couple of comments. Well, one comment, two kind of things. They tie together. In this confrontation over addressing people in public and stuff, my father told me a long time ago that if somebody's a real jerk, how are they going to know unless you tell them? I read somewhere in a social work book one time that, and I can't remember the name of the book or the author, that the only thing that changes adult behavior permanently is peer pressure. That's why shunning is so effective.
Mm.
So if those two things are true, it's just kind of food for thought, you know?
And in fact, shunning...
That. Well, does that mean, I don't think you should do violent confrontation, but I think people have to be told if they're wrong, they need to know that society
you make a really good point.
Wrong.
Make a good point, Terrence. And forgive me for interrupting, but I've got like 3 seconds here before we hit a break. Well, there we are. Shunning is the most powerful, or one of the most powerful behaviors is done in the animal kingdom. Turning your back on another. And in fact, dog trainers teach you to turn your back on the dog. It shuts the dog down immediately. And Native American communities, expulsion from the community was the most severe punishment that there was. So yeah, shunning is powerful stuff. Thanks a lot for the call. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. I want to talk about the issue that is, I believe, in large part, although it's certainly not exclusively, the source of why people were shouting at Kristen Nielsen, the head of the Department of Homeland Security in the MXDC restaurant, the Mexican restaurant in Washington, D.C., why they were standing outside her house playing the sounds of children crying, why the Red Hen restaurant in Virginia asked Sarah Huckabee Sanders and her family to please leave. Donald Trump has now said that he wants people who are here seeking asylum as refugees. They are in the United States, and they are in the United States legally. If you are seeking asylum, the United States has laws, and the United Nations has treaties, which we have signed, which say that every country in the world, if someone shows up and says, I am seeking asylum, I am a refugee, you have to, at the very least, take them in while you determine whether they are actually in danger. And if they are, provide them with asylum. And Trump is saying, no, we don't want to do this. We're not going to find out what kind of terrible situation these people are in. Screw that. Well, here's his exact tweet from yesterday. He says, we cannot allow all of these people to invade our country. When somebody comes in, we must immediately, with no judges or court cases, bring them back where they came from. Bring them back from where they came. Our system, well, that's interesting. He's ending the sentence with the verb, just like they do in German. Our system is a mockery to good immigration policy and law and order. Most children come without parents. That is both illegal and unconstitutional, what the President of the United States, who swore an oath to uphold the Constitution, is suggesting. Ted Lieu, former Congressman Ted Lieu of California, in response to this, tweets, Dear Donald Trump, remember the oath you took at the Constitution, to the Constitution at your relatively small inauguration? You should read that Constitution. The Due Process Clause applies to all persons, not just U.S. citizens. And Norm Eisen, who is an ethics expert, tweets, back to Trump. He's trying to use the most vulnerable as a battering ram in his ongoing attack on the rule of law. But if he can deprive them of due process, American citizens will be next. How long before the new chant at his rallies is lock them all up? Now is the time to hold the line. Amen. And Trump is selling this to the Republican base, which is now 90% behind him. This is how effective this use of race as a tool. The white Republican base, 90% behind Trump, and this extraordinary propaganda network of Fox News and right-wing hate radio, this is how effective they are. Because he's saying, okay, we've got a law in the books that says you can't be in the United States without permission, without being, you know, without going through an immigration process or being given a visa without permission. And that's true. And that law is a misdemeanor with a penalty of up to, I believe, 2 years in jail. But typically misdemeanor crimes, first offense, no other crime associated with it. Typically misdemeanor crimes, like jaywalking, for example, is a misdemeanor crime. In the state of Florida, it's got in the state of Georgia, it's got a three-year penalty. You can go to jail for 3 years for jaywalking. Now, why is it so severe in Georgia? Well, because back in, you know, prior to the 1960s, those jaywalking laws were really important. When Louise and I lived in Atlanta, we lived in Atlanta for 13 years, back in the 80s and 90s, started and ran two businesses there. When we lived in Atlanta, there were Peachtree Streets everywhere. And I asked a friend of mine who had been on the Atlanta City Council, why all the Peachtree Streets? And he said, because there used to be a law in Atlanta, and it was only taken off the books in the 1960s with the civil rights laws when it was determined to be illegal. There used to be a law on the books in the city of Atlanta that said that no black person could live, work, or walk on Peachtree Street. Peachtree Street being the main street that ran right through the middle of Atlanta back in the days. And as new neighborhood communities were annexed into Atlanta and wanted to make sure that they were white-only communities, what they did is they ran a Peachtree Street through the middle of their community. So there's 37 different Peachtree Streets in Atlanta. It's a joke in Atlanta. You say, well, you know, in fact, there's a corner of Peachtree. There's numerous corners of Peachtree and Peachtree where Peachtree Streets, you know, routed off Peachtree Streets to, as a way of saying this is a whites-only neighborhood, which brings us back to race. Back in 2010, Raquel Nelson she went to shop for groceries with a bus. And the bus came back late. It was for her upcoming birthday party. And the bus came back late and dropped her off at a crosswalk, which was 0.3 mile away from a crossing where she could cross the street to get to her house. Her house is on the other side of the street from the crosswalk. So along with a bunch of other people who were on the bus, it was her son. Several people who were on the bus started to step out into the traffic, or, you know, when they thought that there was a gap in the traffic. There was a guy coming, but he was way over in the other lane. And her son stepped out with them. And the guy driving, his name was Jerry Guy. He was drunk. He had taken painkillers. He was mostly blind in one eye. And he had been convicted of two prior hit and runs. And this guy hit her little 4-year-old son and killed him. Jerry Guy was white. He was sentenced to 6 months in jail for killing her son. She was black, and she was prosecuted for jaywalking. And jaywalking in Georgia is 12 months in prison. She was prosecuted for jaywalking, and she was looking, as well as improperly crossing the roadway, as jaywalking, reckless conduct related to the jaywalking, and second-degree homicide by vehicle, which is bizarre. And she was looking at 3 years in prison. She was later acquitted, by the way, in 2013. It took a couple of years, but she was acquitted. And now, but, you know, black person, jaywalking. Here we have the story of Sadella Roman, a French citizen. And I frankly don't know her ethnicity. The news reports I've seen have not, she's French, but I mean her racial ethnicity,
She's part African.
But I saw the picture of her, And she certainly has a lot more melanin in her skin than I do. So whether she's, you know, part African or whether she's, you know, part, I don't know, but probably part African. She's a French citizen. She's dark-skinned. She was arrested and detained for 2 weeks by ICE. She's in Canada, right? She's a French citizen visiting her family in Canada, and she's jogging down on the coast down the Pacific Ocean. And she passes the U.S. border without realizing it and gets busted in the United States by ICE and says, oh, I'm sorry, I'll jog back to Canada. And they're like, nope. Black people trying to come into the United States or brown people trying to come into the United States, we do not tolerate that. I mean, that's not literally what they said, but here's the, you know, the news report from the Huffington Post. After her arrest, she told she told CBC News, Canadian Broadcasting News, that she was jogging during a visit to British Columbia where her mother lives. She didn't realize she'd illegally crossed the border. She said, an officer stopped me and started telling me I crossed the border illegally. I told him I had not done it on purpose and that I didn't understand what was happening. After her arrest, she was transferred to immigration to ICE custody and transported over 100 miles to Tacoma, Washington's Northwest Detention Center. And she was kept there for 2 weeks. She said they put me in caged vehicles and brought me into their facility. They asked me to remove all my personal belongings with my jewelry. They searched me everywhere. Meanwhile, on today, by the way, is Tamir Rice's 16th birthday. Meanwhile, Nena Agaucha, if I'm saying her name right, lives in a gated townhouse community in Buckhead, Atlanta. This is the fancy schmancy part of Atlanta. It's like the Beverly Hills of Atlanta. This is from Daily Kos. She's a physician. She's a medical doctor. She's black. She was coming home from an overnight shift at the hospital, and she lives in a gated community. And a guy pulls his SUV in ahead of her, puts on his hazard lights, gets out, and explains to her she's behind him. She wants to get into her own gated community where her house is. She says, and I quote, he got out of the car and threatened to call the police on me because I was trespassing. This is racial profiling at its finest. Well, he did call the police. Black person trying to get into gated community. And the police showed up. She also called the police. The police showed up. There's a 30-minute video of this floating around the internet. This is the terrorism of racial profiling. She said, this is what she said in the video. She said, when this altercation was going on, what went through my mind was that this guy could do absolutely anything to me. She's talking about the white guy who blocked her from going into her own neighborhood. He could shoot me dead on the spot because he was, quote, trying to protect the neighborhood. And the property and the people would make up stories later. This white supremacist, this is from the Post at Daily Kos, a white supremacist system works because everyone knows the deal, even if they're not consciously thinking about it, like in the case of this guy who blocked her from going in. They size up the situation and know that the state will protect them over someone else, will believe them over someone else. They know that the state is there to protect people like them, white people. So here we are. A policy that is explicitly racist, being promoted to get out the white racist base, the Nixon Southern Strategy base, the base, the white racist base that elected Richard Nixon in 1968, that elected Ronald Reagan in 1980, the white racist base that is now gung-ho for Donald Trump. It's turning into a religion, 90% approval among Republicans.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And this is happening in our country, and we're debating how to respond to that. 18 minutes past the hour. You know, in the world of work, one of the most important things is one of the things that people probably think the least about until they have to sit in it, which is their chair. And the X chair is absolutely extraordinary. This is the new high-tech. In fact, they've got a brand new version. It's called the X3, the newest version of the X chair. It is comfortable. It is high-tech. And yes, I'll say it, it is sexy. This chair is extraordinary. And it will dramatically, consequentially improve your concentration and productivity because it's going to help your posture. And, you know, if you're not in pain and your blood is working, you know, flowing well, your brain is going to work well. The new X3 is quite simply the most modern, ergonomic, high-tech, comfortable office chair in the world, period. The X3's unique ATR fabric makes it feel like you're literally floating on air. And its patented split-back lumbar technology provides a cradling, customized feel that has to be experienced to believe. You need to see and feel the X3 for yourself. Go to xchairtom.com. That's xchairtom.com now. to check out the X3's perfect blend of design and ergonomics. A lot of people, you know, checking these out and going for these chairs. Supplies are limited, so don't wait. Order at xchairtom.com. And if you do it now, you get $100 off. That's xchairtom.com. Or you can call them at 1-844-4-X-CHAIR. This chair comes with a 30-day, no-questions-asked guarantee of complete satisfaction. That's how good it is. Go to xchairtom.com right now. Use the code TOM, T-H-O-M, to get a free footrest. xchairtom.com. Now back to the podcast.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. On the phone with us, our old friend Madia Benjamin, the activist co-founder of Code Pink and Global Exchange, author, Kingdom of the Unjust, was the last of her books that I read with great interest. She has a brand new one out. It's called Inside Iran, The Real History and Politics of the Islamic Republic of Iran. And Madia, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Tom. Nice to be on with you.
It's great having you with us.
Here in Congress, I hope it's a good sound, but I
yeah.
Am in the halls of our great congressional offices where we try to get them to represent us.
Cool. So what's the state of our situation? I saw Lawrence Wilkerson came out a while back and said, the former aide in the Bush administration said, don't trust Trump and Bolton to deliver peace in North Korea. This is just a show. What's going on with the situation? I want to ask you about North Korea, about Iran, and you know, we could talk about Saudi Arabia, Israel, whatever's on your mind as well. But let's start with that. What do you think?
Well, I think I love Larry Wilkerson, but I don't agree with him on this one. I have spent quite a while in South Korea in the last couple of years and seen how their candlelight revolution that started at the end of 2016 and culminated in March 2017 by impeaching a corrupt government, something we should do, and putting in a new government of President Moon with a mandate not only to get rid of corruption, but also to make peace on the peninsula, and how he is really being pushed by the Korean people, and he has been doing a masterful job of it. And there are so many new and amazing things happening between the two Koreas that when I was there with a group of women called Women Cross the DMZ just last month, at the very time that Donald Trump announced that he would be canceling the summit, there was an immediate scramble to try to get it back on again. And you saw the mastery of President Moon meeting with the North Korean chairman and getting things back on track again. Mm-hmm. And so I think, as the Koreans told us there, the peace train has left the station, and Donald Trump should get on board. But that it's going with or without him.
Right, and it appears that that's the case, and I agree with you. And in fact, I've said the same on this program a number of times. My point, I guess, was that Trump should not be getting credit for this. This is President Moon Jae-in and the people of South Korea. You know, we've talked on the show about how, you know, they elected him based on a peace platform. He's following through on that, and he's been, in some ways, I guess, you know, playing Trump as much as anything. It seems.
Well, that's right. And I think it's quite remarkable what the people of South Korea have done. You know, in the case of the North, it's such an authoritarian regime that you can't have civil society groups that are pressuring the government. It's all coming from the top down. But in the case of the South, it's really this bottom-up movement that is just quite remarkable. And getting a chance to witness it, not only around the peace things, but their opposition to U.S. military bases, opposition to U.S. weapons system, like the THAAD anti-missile system that people didn't want.
Well, that's
in their
been going on for years, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So they are quite active, and it's a tribute to their democracy that they have President Moon in place, that this is going forward, that they're going to be they're going to open up the program of family reunification again, that they're going to open up the Kaesong economic zone, so that there will be trade between the two. And, you know, this has tremendous momentum because Moon has over 80% approval rating, and over 80% of the people want to see peace, want to see these peace talks move forward.
Do the people of South Korea see Donald Trump as the guy who could screw this up? Is that their nervousness, or do they see him as the guy who could help make it happen, or do they see him as inconsequential?
They are nervous about him. In fact, they said they people told us that they fear Donald Trump more than they feared Kim Jong-un, because Kim Jong-un, they've been living with him or his family for a long time. They have a better understanding of how he works, but they really feel that Donald Trump is very erratic. They saw what he did in the Iran nuclear deal. They don't feel like they can trust him, which is all the more reason that there's this flurry of activity to have things move forward. You know, it's very interesting when Donald Trump canceled the war exercises, and it was portrayed as, you know, how could he do this without consulting with the South Koreans? Well, you know, the South Koreans that we know, and I think in the government, were delighted.
Yeah.
They wanted to see some reciprocity on behalf of the Trump administration. After all, on the part of the North, they had not only given U.S. prisoners, but they had stopped their testing, and they stopped the development of nuclear weapons, and they had already blown up one site. So they had done quite a lot to show their goodwill. It was certainly something that was expected from the Korean side.
Yeah, very interesting. After your just absolutely extraordinary book, Kingdom of the Unjust, Behind the U.S.-Saudi Connection, you have this new book out, Inside Iran, The Real History and Politics of the Islamic Republic of Iran. What's going on there right now?
Well, the Iran nuclear deal, which Trump withdrew from, but the other members, Britain, France, Germany, Russia, and China, are still part of, is hanging on by life support, because the European companies are not being cushioned by their own governments from the effects of U.S. sanctions, which not only say U.S. companies can't do business, but say that any companies around the world that have any kind of business in the United States cannot do business with Iran. And so the threat of these very expansive sanctions has been enough for European countries to companies to already cancel deals. And so the Iranian government is put in a very difficult position. If it can't show any kind of economic boost from being part of this deal, then the hardliners who have already said, look, we told you never to negotiate with the West, and certainly not with the United States, that can't be trusted, the hardliners are going to push for Iran to get out of the deal. And that is putting us in an even more dangerous collision course.
That would be the point at which either the U.S. or Israel might start bombing their nuclear facilities.
Well, that's right. And, you know, Israel has been gunning for the U.S. to do this, especially during the time that John Kerry was negotiating. He talks about how during the negotiations, the Israelis were saying, no, we want you to just go in and bomb their facilities. Of course, you know, let's remember, and your audience is a sophisticated one, that Netanyahu, who talks about the existential threat of Iran, it represents the country that has been lying for decades since the 1960s about its own nuclear weapon program, has over 200 nuclear weapons, refused to join the Non-Proliferation Treaty, which Iran did, and yet is the one that's accusing Iran of hiding elements of its nuclear program where there does not exist a nuclear weapon.
It's a rather staggering irony. Do you think that that, you know, Trump actually wants basically what Trump has done is to cede power to the hardliners and to make Rouhani, the semi-reformist president, correct me if I'm getting names wrong here, essentially disempower him. Do you think that Trump actually is doing this for that purpose, or is this just, you know, a campaign slogan that tested well on the trail, you know, that was really directed at hate for Obama, who was, you know, part of, you know, was involved in the deal? You know, that this was purely partisan and had nothing to do with what he's trying to do on the international stage. Or is he trying to support the authoritarians? Excuse me.
Yeah, I would have thought that, Tom, had he not brought in Mike Pompeo and John Bolton, who are two notorious anti-Iran hawks.
Right.
And he has also strengthened the already very cozy relationship with both the Saudis and the Israelis. So you add all that together, plus, as you were saying, his desire to overturn anything that was the legacy of Obama. And it looks like their, quote, plan B is just chaos inside Iran, because there is certainly no entity that's strong enough waiting in the wings to take over were this regime to fall. And the MEK, the terrorist group that Bolton is so enamored of, has close to zero credibility inside Iran, because at the time of the very, very bloody Iran-Iraq war in the 1980s, this group sided with Iraq, with the enemy. And so there is no group that could take over. It would be total chaos. And some people speculate that that's what Israel would like, to see Iran broken up into pieces with different minority groups fighting each other, different ideological groups fighting each other. That is the plan B.
Have Iran melt down the way Iraq and Afghanistan melted down after we decapitated their governments. That's amazing.
Right, exactly. What's... right, which is why so many people, both inside and Iranian Americans on the outside, are really worried. Many of them don't like their government, would like to see a different government in power, but they look around the region and they say U.S. involvement or the kind of chaos that results is not what we want. We want reform. And the economy, Tom, is in very, very dire straits. When it was announced that that Trump was pulling out of the Iran nuclear deal, and even when Trump announced that Bolton was going to be the national security advisor, the Iranian currency, the rial, lost 20 to 30% of its value.
Oh my.
So things are very bad inside Iran, and there's a lot of complaining about the economy, but people do feel that that reform inside the present government right now is the best that they can hope for.
We're talking to Medea Benjamin. Medea, we have only 45 seconds left before this. Before I hit a hard break here. What's the situation in Yemen?
The situation in Yemen is that there is an intermediate cease on the attack of Hodeidah while the international community is trying to stop the Saudis from taking that port, which would jeopardize the majority of humanitarian aid coming into the country and lead to many, many thousands of more deaths. So let's hope that that can come through and we can move towards a negotiating table and end that horrific war.
Yeah, it's horrific as, you know, it doesn't even begin to describe. I mean, they're using cluster bombs over there, aren't they? Made
well,
in America.
Cluster bombs made in America, illegal by the international community, and the U.S. is helping not only to bomb, but to supply all the logistical support
right, to the
in
Saudis.
The bombings that take out clinics and marketplaces and all kinds of residential neighborhoods.
Medea Benjamin, her new book is Inside Iran, codepink.org is the website. You can tweet her at Medea Benjamin. Thank you, Medea.
Thanks so much, Tom. Good
being on the Tom Hartman Program.
52 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 8 minutes before the hour, however you want to say it. Tip to callers, always make your big point first and then fill in the details. People who work up to things very often, you know, hit the brake, which just happened recently. Liz in West Hollywood, California. Hey, Liz, what's on your mind?
Morning, Tom. About the situation that Trump has put us in with the immigrants, I think if he thinks it's so wonderful that this program is so good for the children, that he should put Barron in there, and I think he has four grandchildren. They should all go in there for a week and see how it affects them.
Wow. Tough love, Liz. I frankly don't think he would care. I think this guy was raised without basically, you know, affection or human contact. He basically, the only way that he has learned how to get something that resembles affection is by buying sex. And he, you know, he never had any pets. He never, you know, he never had anything that he could relate to in a touchy-feely way. Maybe his kids, maybe he was affectionate toward his kids. But I think this guy is so badly damaged that even if his own grandchildren were in this process, he wouldn't get it. But I could be wrong.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, but I get what you're saying, Liz.
Actually, I think you're right, because I was arguing with people before. I said the man is a psychopath, and it has nothing to do with politics. He is crazy.
Yes.
And I worked with a lot of crazy people. I worked in a family law courtroom, and I saw him every day, you know.
Yeah.
And I got to the point where I could pick him off. And Trump just struck me as being a very, very disturbed man.
Yeah, and now we see this study that found that the highest percentage of psychopaths of any city in the United States is Washington, D.C., surprise, surprise. I guess that the majority
really?
Of them are Republicans. Yeah, really. Liz, thank you for the call. I got to move along, but thank you. George in Chicago. Can you hear me, George?
Yes, I can, Tom. Can
okay.
you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. Let's have a conversation. What's on your mind?
Well, when you were speaking earlier of the Defense Department's plans to build what you can only call detention camps, and it struck me as very ironic that during the 8 years of President Obama's terms in office, that it was a constant refrain on the right-wing sound machine that Obama was secretly building concentration camps to lock up conservatives and NRA members.
Whoop. I'm sorry, George. Continue. For some reason, you just got popped on a hold.
Oh, well, very quickly, the irony of Trump building these detention camps on military bases after 8 years of the right-wing sound machine saying that Obama was secretly building concentration camps for IRA members and conservatives and others of that ilk. It's like Roger Ailes and Frank Luntz's strategy is that accuse your opponent of what it is you really want to do and beat him up for it, and then you go ahead and do it and say, it's all right if we decide to do it.
Right. Yeah, good point, George. Very good point. Thank you very much. We have about 40 seconds. Patrick in San Diego, California. Hey, Patrick, can you hear me?
Yes, I've got it very clearly.
You have the last 30 seconds.
All right. Thank you. My point this morning is it sort of goes along with a lot of things you've been talking about, and I think it's time to reframe the language from the right, from the left. And I'm using the term regressives to refer to conservatives, neocons, Tea Partiers, the whole group. If they're going to label me as a progressive, or I'm going to do that myself, they are definitely regressives, and I use it in all my communications now.
Yeah, I think it goes beyond that. I think that they are not respecters of our Constitution, our rule of law, or our nation, frankly. Patrick, thank you for the call. And thanks for listening to KMSJ there in San Diego. I appreciate that. Thanks so much for being with us today. We will be back tomorrow with more of the Tom Hartman program as we roll along here. And in the meantime, don't forget, in particular, in these times of crisis like we are experiencing right now, it's not enough to just sit around, right? We've got to do something. We've got to get active. That may involve calling your member of Congress. It might involve showing up at a protest meeting or just voting. But get out there, get active, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.